Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 10th of September, recording at 7:24 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, because it's Friday, this audio covers the big picture, long-term outlook for the various asset classes that I analyze. And the very first thing I'm going to say is that this remains a tricky, choppy, whipsaw environment overall. Now, I said at the beginning of the year that that's what we were likely to see for a good many markets. There would always be some trading and investment opportunities, as there always are, but it was a much more risky period, in my view, than 2003. And I think most people would agree that at least the first eight and a half months nearly, have been fairly volatile, choppy, whipsaw, lots of sideways ranging activity, and so on. But as you also know, we've had some fairly good trades in a number of different markets over the year. But I've just been reminded since I've been back in the new positions that I've opened up that, hey, this environment is not easy. And no surprise there, but more on that in a moment. First, let's take the stock market sector. In terms of the big picture global outlook, I maintain very much that the U.S. market is in a secular bear trend. And this is likely to last the better part of a generation. And really the main question is it going to resemble what we saw back in the late 1960s through in right up into the early 1980s, which is largely a sideways trading range with a few bungee jumps on the downside when after the Dow had rallied up to the higher side of its band near 1,000, 1,025. How will I remember that? Or is it going to be more like the Japan secular bear market? And that would involve more weakness overall against the background of that deflationary environment that we saw in Japan. Now, of course, there are a whole load of people out there who would say that we're not going to see a secular bear market at all. And the chief among those people are the many cheerleaders who are in the retail industry, retail investment industry, I mean. And they have a big vested interest in bull markets, needless to say. Well, anybody could be right. I'm not a knower. I'm an analyst and give you my views and why, but I maintain that every shred of financial history shows that after those really big bubbles, such as we saw in culminating or bursting in 2000, that we do get these secular bear trends, which I've defined here very often as a generation of PE ratio contraction, not in a straight line, of course, but in waves, as the market will rally and then fall, and sentiment gets very bearish. Then we get another technical rally, and then that fails again. And as I say, we have a ceiling for markets. And I, for instance, would be really quite surprised to see the S&P 500 index move above its 2000 high at any time during the next decade, or to move above it by any degree, any significant degree, I should say. Now, whether or not we get the late 60s to early 80s type of secular bear on Wall Street, or we get the more Japanese style bear, and of course there are others, but late 60s to early 80s was the least damaging of those secular bear cycles in terms of market action. But whether we get that or the more punishing type will depend a lot on how much money is in circulation, and there has been one heck of a lot of money in circulation, and that obviously tends to prop-up markets a little bit more than might otherwise be the case. Okay, now what does that mean for other markets? And I posted a fine report on the website. It's the one from CLSA that Ramesh Chandramani forwarded to me, and just talking about Japan with a lot of perspective and what Japanese recovery would mean for the whole Asian region and so on. Well, you know my view that we're going to see that Japanese recovery. And Christopher Wood, I think the main author of that report, mentioned a number of times the possibility of uncoupling from the US markets. Now, uncoupling, investors are always looking for something or hoping that markets are going to uncouple from Wall Street, particularly when, and what they really mean is that when Wall Street's soft, they hope that other markets are going to uncouple and be much stronger. If Wall Street's strong, of course, as we saw during the 1990s, then nobody's wanting any kind of uncoupling. They're hoping that they all couple. Now, I don't want to spend an awfully long time on this. You could devote an hour to the subject, but basically, if Wall Street's weak, it has always had a leash effect on other markets, and not least because U.S. investors provide a lot of money that goes into other stock markets. And European markets tend to track Wall Street pretty closely, and of course the European markets provide a lot of capital that goes into other overseas markets. You know, all you have to do is look in that Christopher Wood report from CLSA and look at the high proportion of foreign money in the Japanese stock market right now. And you can see the problem that would occur if Wall Street takes a beating. Europeans and Americans tend to pull a lot of that money back home and put it in bonds or deposit accounts or whatever. So I'm not a big bull on the uncoupling theme, but I am a big bull on the outperformance theme. Now, if any market's going to uncouple or it certainly outperform, I would expect it not to be Europe. I regard the European markets as high beta versions of what happens on Wall Street. Japan, though, is the one that, having had its long secular bear market, which is out of sync with what was going on for most of that 1990s period on Wall Street, really is the top candidate to outperform over the long term. I'm talking about the next 10 to 15 years, other developed markets. So that's very, very much my candidate. And if Japan does that, then I would have little doubt that the emerging Asian markets would do even better. And I think that subject to governance, of course. But governance is not such a problem there as it has been in Central and South America, for instance. I also feel that emerging markets generally will outperform the developed markets on the upside, but they're very volatile and they can very often suffer on the way back down. But I would expect on the upside overall, I would expect the East European markets to way outperform the West European markets. And anything that's big in commodities really should have some glory days. So when we talk about secular bear markets, this is no doom and gloom scenario. It's just that it does require that we change our overall investing habits. We become more medium-term traders rather than long-term trend runners. But if you do anything in the long-term trend running department, for me this would be in emerging markets, and my favorites are the Asian emerging markets, and the best way to invest in those on a very long-term basis is, I think, on some sort of dollar, euro, or pound cost averaging basis, where, for instance, in a pension fund account, you would be putting in a fixed amount every single month. Okay, now what about right now within this secular bear market on Wall Street? Are we in a down phase or are we in an up phase? Well, as you know, we've been in a down phase for most of the year to date, and excuse me, I have been suggesting that we could see now a better period, that we had a really important low occur, medium term low, in mid-August, given those good chart signals that you were seeing on some of the charts that Owen Tracy was posting while I was away. And I feel that now we're probably in a consolidation phase where the uptrends that we saw from that mid-August, those mid-August lows, roll over, they lose the momentum, and range sideways, pull back a bit. But it does look to me, I feel it's better than a 50-50 chance that that we will see a further rally running into, well, could certainly a good chance of running through the end of this year, and also quite a reasonable chance that it could run well into the first quarter of 2005. Now, there are some big provisos in that. One would be no horrendous terrorist attack in the United States, and touch wood, I think that's the least likely risk, although I wouldn't underestimate the desire of various terrorist Al-Qaeda-related groups to try to pull off something like that. But I'm not going to invest on the basis that that might happen, although I know some people are. More of a more immediate concern to me is the price of oil, but that's been in retreat recently, and it looks like a medium-term correction is underway. But if oil were to go shooting back up to its high that we saw last month at $49 and a bit on the U.S. Sweet Texas crude spot price, let alone break through the $50 level, well, I think that would weigh heavily on stock markets. But at the moment, we've gone from major scare to less concern on the oil prices, say, has pulled back. It's not as low as would be really good for the global economy, but it's not too high. The other factor is interest rates, not too high in real terms. The interest rates, if investors see a sort of monthly progression of interest rate hikes, then they really are going to back away, and that would weigh heavily on stock markets. But what was the seeming paradox for many investors at a time when the macro picture from Japan through to the United States was deteriorating, where people were revising down their GDP growth estimates somewhat for the fourth quarter of this year, that stock markets were beginning to firm up, and as we've seen in recent weeks. And I think a contributing factor there, not as important perhaps as oil, the oil moved, and there's a direct correlation, there's an inverse correlation there, but those interest rate expectations have been lowered. In other words, people are not expecting rates to move up as quickly or as far as they had previously feared. So that has been a favorable factor for markets overall. So try to line all that up, and provided the August lows hold, and I think they will, and provided the oil price doesn't go through the roof in the next few months, and I don't think it will, and provided interest rates don't go up more than people are currently expecting, and I don't think they will, then we are going to see that year-end. Oh, one other I forgot to say, quite an important one here, and provided President Bush stays ahead in the opinion polls. Now, that's not a political comment, but you've seen the graph that I've put up from time to time showing that markets do best, or Wall Street does best, in election years when the incumbent looks like winning, and it's an over 14% gain if it's an incumbent Republican, and the gain is 10 points lower, 10 percentage points lower, if the incumbent looks like losing. And right now, the polls favor Bush. So take all those factors. In other words, Bush stays ahead in the polls and the others that I've already covered, then I think we could certainly expect, following a bit of consolidation in September and early October, a further run on the upside for stock markets. That's the way I see it at any rate. Now, what about the government bond markets? And here, I maintain that the secular bull market, the last one, ended in June of 2003, and that everything we have seen has been, subsequently, has been a period of top formation extension. And bonds have had a pretty good run recently in the last few months, and that has had me sort of salivating a bit in terms of anticipation of further short sell opportunities, and I'm glad I didn't move in too quickly on these. Monitor the charts. Last Friday, I thought we had a really significant signal in terms of the downside dynamics, mainly key day reversals that we saw on a number of the futures contracts, but I did mention that it was a bit of a bizarre signal because the markets had spiked up just before the U.S. Employment figures and then immediately plunged right back down. So it was now you see it, now you don't, a type of move, which made me a little bit suspicious. So I held off, and fortunately, because the bond markets have remained steady, and I'm still holding off and waiting. But there's no doubt in my mind that my next move in the government long-dated government bond markets will be to open short positions. And I wouldn't be surprised if I do that relatively soon. But again, it will be subject to the technical action. I'm hoping to get slightly better levels, in other words. Now, why would we get a secular bear market in government bonds? Well, one thing, because the secular bull market, which reflected a lot of deflationary fears, shows certainly clear technical evidence that it has ended. And I think there are two overriding factors overall. One will be supply. The governments are running deficits and churning out massive quantities of additional bonds, not least in Japan and in the United States. So supply keeps going up, and as I've mentioned before, if they need to sell so much, do we really want to if they need to borrow so much, talking about the United States government, the Japanese government, other governments, if they need to borrow so much, do we really want to lend to them? Well, probably most of you would say at a price, but not at these prices, not at these yields, not in my my book. The other factor is inflation, and I've long maintained, and when I say long maintained for more than 2 years, that the seeds of the next inflationary cycle have already been sown. In other words, that the period ahead is likely to be much more like the 1970s and early 1980s. It'll be different, of course, but it'll be much more like that than the late 1980s and 1990s. So, bonds clearly would be under pressure if inflationary pressures did build up, not immediately, not quickly, but over the next 10 to 15 years. And what about currency markets? Well, here I've said before that we don't get the really big once a generation or generational long secular trends in the currency markets, because no country can withstand a strong currency for such a long period of time. They just print more of it when that happens. But overall, as you know, the big story in the last few years was dollar weakness, and of course people will go on extrapolating that trend until it becomes embarrassingly clear to them that that trend is in a stage of reversal. So where are we right now? We've got mostly ranging markets for currencies overall, which is an uninteresting environment as far as I'm concerned. Many people will say, well, thank heavens for that. It's a more stable environment. I'm not having to worry about massive hedging programs, particularly some of the corporate subscribers would be concluding that. And yes, you're right. My view back in July and earlier than that was that we would probably see the dollar go back and test its lows against most currencies, and the dollar index do that. But since I got back from my holiday at the end of August, I have been looking, and I've been looking at the charts. I've been saying, well, the dollar really looks a little bit steadier than that. hasn't been the last few days, incidentally, but overall, last few months, it had firmed up a little bit. And the euro, in other words, was beginning to look a bit toppy. Sterling was beginning to look a bit toppy against the US dollar. The rand was beginning to look definitely toppy against the US dollar. Now these currencies can take quite a long time to bottom out, sometimes several years or top out. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if we didn't see a fair amount of additional ranging. But my hunch at this stage is that we would more likely to see over the next 6 to 12 months a somewhat firmer dollar than a somewhat weaker dollar, but I have no real conviction on that. In other words, this is not something I'm going to risk my money on. It's not a call I'm going to risk my money on. It's too iffy at this stage. I'm just going to watch. What about commodities now? And this remains a hugely interesting sector as far as I'm concerned. I believe that a secular bull market is underway. Remember the supply and elasticity theme. I think that the reasons for this secular bull market are all too apparent. First, if we get a synchronized global economic recovery, and we've had that, it's been sort of a modest recovery, and more often than not, stronger in Asia, particularly strong in China. The US and the UK stronger than continental Europe, but it has been synchronized, and we hadn't seen that for what, about 15, 20 years. Now, whenever that happens, we do get bull markets in commodities. And we've certainly, in the last 3 years, have seen a number of bull markets in the industrial commodities, everything from metals to crude oil, lumber, and we've also seen bull markets in the precious metals, which of course have a very high number of industrial uses as well. Now, currently, I think that many of those moves have paused, correction phases are underway. Some of these metals, to me, look a bit vulnerable to downside action. So I'm really well, I've got fewer positions than at any time over the year to date, fewer long positions. And I'd actually taken a perhaps chancy trade and by going in and shorting aluminium earlier in the week, and it's I think I did that yesterday, and it's gone up. It went up yesterday, went up $33 in here today. That's not a huge percentage move, but a little bit of an eyebrow-raising move. So I may have been making a mistake in doing it. It's still very much in the range, so I'm not going to panic just yet on this. But my big theme view is that this is where we're going to see the best of the secular bull markets, industrial commodities. And my only caveat on that is that these markets are hugely volatile, so you do have to be careful. These are thin markets. They tend to be dominated more often than not by the producers and consumers. And with a big overlay now of hedge fund interest and a growing pension fund interest. If you read that report that I posted yesterday or the day before about Harvard Pension Fund and others taking big positions in commodities. But very often in the commodity markets, you see these go from a position where everybody wants the stuff and then nobody wants the stuff. So they really are more volatile than equity markets, and therefore we do need to use charts extensively in our in terms of our tactical plays in these markets. But I do continue to like them a great deal. I'm sure that I will be playing the commodity markets much, much more on the long side than I will on the short side over the next 10 to 15 years. There'll be some opportunities in some of the soft commodities as well, but those are trickier, and the supply component as we go through the crop cycles is can be really quite volatile as well. But the biggest driving factor, other than the synchronized global economic recovery, which will wax and wane, is of course this voracious appetite for raw materials that we're seeing from China. That's a story that's going to run and run and run, and it will affect energy, which albeit is in a medium-term correction right now in terms of the petroleum prices. But the big picture is of further gains in that market. Ditto, the precious metals and the industrial metals and a number of the soft commodities. That's my spiel for yet another week, and it's just left for me to say, have a splendid weekend.